Well, my guest in the studio tonight was described by the drummer John Morrison, the kind of musician that defines the word complete. A gifted singer, saxophonist, songwriter and bandleader. His inspiring sound crosses many genres, though Nick plays these many strings with a master's touch. What gets me the most is his smooth and captivating voice. Nick Jeffries, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you very much, Frank. How are you?
Very well. Good to see you. But what got you started in music anyway?
Well, look, I've been playing music around Sydney for probably 10 plus years, but I've never really done anything under my own name. This is sort of the first thing that I've released under my own name, I suppose. I grew up over in on the north of Sydney, up over in Belrose. And had, you know, I've had a fairly good upbringing. I was very, very fortunate. Like my parents put me through a little local Catholic primary school in Davidson. And I first started learning saxophone there from David Thiek, actually.
Wow.
So he was my very first teacher. So with a start like that, I didn't have much choice but to not continue with it. You know, he was so inspiring and I really enjoyed learning off him. Even as a little kid, I remember the lessons being great, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then I went through high school and went on to study at the Conservatorium of Music, again with David Thiek, there in my final years. So it was kind of interesting to see that come full circle, you know. And I've played around Sydney probably for, as I said, the last 10 or more years. And I had my start in the early days at the Old Soup Plus, where I was fortunate enough to have some gigs when I was younger, and I'd go along to the jam sessions there and I'd go and watch the Bradshaw Big Band on Monday nights and all that sort of thing. It's interesting hearing you play Adrian's stuff before. You know, I used to go watch him play with that band, and it's been a great, you know, I love the lifestyle. It's amazing.
So when did you decide to start singing as well?
Well, look, I always sang in high school. I was in choirs and all that sort of thing, but around about year 7 or 8, I think my voice started to break and change, and no one really helped me through that much at school. So I stopped singing for a long time. And then just towards the end of year 12, I was in a band with some mates, and we were doing a lot of jazz and a lot of improvising. We're, you know, checking out a lot of that great Miles stuff from the 50s and 60s. And but at the time we started doing some functions, I suppose, as a lot of musos do, and we needed a singer for the band. So we auditioned all these female singers, and every one of them that came through, I just kept saying, I don't know about that. And then I just decided to start doing it myself. So, and at that point, I was really into Vince Jones, and I was going to see him every Friday at the old Harbourside Brasserie. And
that's right.
You know, I thought, okay, well, where can I go back from there? And then I discovered Kurt Elling and Mark Murphy, of course, and John Hendricks and all those kind of guys, and of course listened to all that great Frank stuff as well. And I just started immersing myself in that and that style, and I wanted to sing. And then I discovered soul music and Motown and all the Stevie stuff, which I'd grown up on anyway with mum and dad, but I just decided I wanted to become a singer. And I think I also knew there's so many amazing saxophone players in this city. And I wanted to try and do something that would give me, I suppose, a bit of an edge and something different to help me get some work, you know. So the singing thing seemed a good thing to do.
I'm just trying to think of a singer saxophonist around town, and none come to mind.
I think there's a few guys that sort of dabble in it, but I don't know that they call themselves singers. You know, I think they probably primarily call themselves saxophone players, and they might sing a melody or two, you know, on a standard. But for me, the singing's probably become more the thing that guys know me for. And then I'd like to think that I'm treated seriously as a saxophonist as well. If, you know, that's, I mean, it's just as important to me. Both things sort of are as important as each other.
Well, I guess that brings me to the hard question. How many hours a day do you play the saxophone?
Oh, look, I'm playing every day. I wouldn't say I'm a huge intense practicer, but I'm definitely playing every day. And whether I've got time to do that for an hour or 2 hours, or whether I play for 4 or 5 hours, you know, I'm always playing the horn every day. But I probably do more practice on the vocal, because I find that not more of a challenge, I shouldn't say that, but I find my voice far more temperamental. And not only that, but anything that I'm practicing on the horn, I also, I guess, try and apply to the voice a bit as well. So both things, and because I sing in that tenor to baritone range as well, anything that I'm playing on the horn, you know, I try and apply to the voice as well. And it's interesting, I like to think that because I'm a saxophone player, it really helped me whenever I'm playing the saxophone behind a female singer or any other singer in general, because I find sometimes when I'm singing, if there's horn players getting up, a lot of the time they're not quite sure what to do around a singer, or, you know, and even when you listen to great records in the past, there's only a few guys who I really would listen to and think, yeah, wow, they're really backing that singer well. And particularly, I mean, one of my favorite records to listen to for that is some of those Ella and Louis recordings, you know, the way that he sort of backs her when she's singing, when he's playing the trumpet, you know. Yeah, it's interesting. I think the being a singer helps me when I'm backing other singers too, when I'm just playing saxophone.
To you, what's the most important element in interpreting a song from a singer's point of view?
From a singer's point of view, I suppose understanding the lyric. I didn't realize where you're going to finish that question, because one of the things I was going to quickly say too was, I remember one of the things Dave Thig teaching not just me but a bunch of us at the con was, even if you're playing a tune on the horn, to make sure you know the lyrics, you know, check out what the lyrics are, because, you know, it'll help you even interpret it when you're playing the melody on the horn too, you know. So I suppose understanding what it's about. I mean, I've had a few different lessons with different singing teachers over the years, and some that have said to me, oh, you know, you've really got to sing the lyric. And I suppose, you know, a few teachers who have explained it to me, I thought it seemed a bit cabaret sometimes to do that, to sort of over-exaggerate each lyric. But, you know, I think knowing what the song's about, and I had a good friend of mine once say to me, when I was younger, I got up and sang Just Friends, which I recorded on the album, and I got up and sang it with a smile on my face. And she said, you can't do that. You know, that song's about a breakup, and it's about, you know, two people that can no longer be together. You can't. And so that got me thinking more about that. So now I sort of try and check out the background of any song I'm singing, no matter what style it sort of comes from, I guess.
Formulate a bit of a mindset before the performance.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's hard when you're on a gig and you're singing, you know, you might sing a song that's about something happy and joyous, and then you've got to sing something that's sad perhaps straight afterwards. So that can be difficult. But, you know, I think the older I get, the better at that I'm getting. But I'm still, you know, music's like that. It's just this long evolving journey for all of us, isn't it?
There's no greater love.
Oh, it's been interpreted by lots of people. There's everyone from, I suppose, I've got versions of Billie Holiday doing it. It's an old standard. So,
yeah.
But more recently too, which is really sad, we lost Amy Winehouse, as I'm sure
you've
probably heard. But she does a version of this as well. I mean, it's been done by lots of different people.
Okay.
But this particular arrangement, we sort of decided to do a bit of a New Orleansy thing on it, because I love Cameron Reed, who's playing drums on it. I love the way there was two feels that he plays that I absolutely love. One of them is like a New Orleansy groove, and the other is a shuffle. And so there's two tunes on the album. I arranged one of them as a New Orleansy style groove, and the other one as a shuffle, and it was specifically with him in mind, you know.
There you go. You must be very pleased to have a band like that recording with you.
Mate, I can't tell you how inspiring it was, you know, rehearsing and putting the tunes together and recording with them. They're just tremendous musicians, those guys. And I mean, because I'd done a work with all three of them separately, and then next thing you know, I'm seeing them around town as a bit of a trio together rather frequently. Cameron Reed, I have to thank him, you know, because he really pushed me to do this as well, you know, because we'd worked together in a number of other bands. And as I said, I'd never really done anything under my own name, and Cam was just pushing me to sort of get it happening. So,
and this has been a project that's been in the pipeline for you for a couple of years now, isn't it?
It has, you know. It's interesting. I probably haven't said this to anyone before, but the con, it doesn't really teach you how to release a record. It, you know, it's interesting, like, and not that I expected it to be spoon-fed, but they sort of, you know, you spend all this time working on...
You're not dealing with the business end of the music industry.
Yeah, that's it. And so for me, this has all been a bit of a... I mean, I've called friends and, you know, Adrian Cunningham's helped me, and Matt Baker's helped me, and Cameron Reed helped me a little bit as well, and a few other people. But it's, you know, you have to ask questions, and people sort of say, well, why don't you try this or go in this direction or... And so a lot of it, I mean, a lot of it was saving the money to do it all individually, you know, because it wasn't really an originals project. You know, all the tunes on there are either covers or standards, you know, done in our own way, of course. But in terms of maybe applying for a grant or something, I didn't really think that was a good way to go. So I've basically saved the money each step of the way and had to sort of feel out how to do it. So that's why it's taken me so long, I suppose.
What is your take on how jazz is perceived generally by your generation?
That's a good question. I think you know, it's interesting because a lot of guys would potentially bag out artists such as, speaking very generally here, but, you know, Harry Connick or Michael Bublé or any of that sort of thing. But I think for our generation, because of those big famous artists, because I guess a lot of our generation, it's we're relying on what's sort of fed to us through the media and what we see on television and all that sort of thing. Even though people might say, oh, I'm not going to listen to Bublé, I'd rather listen to Frank, or which, you know, I agree with to a certain extent. But thanks to sort of some of those guys that are, I guess, those pop jazz artists, I think some of that stuff is coming back. But, you know, also in Sydney now, I mean, I feel like there's a really healthy underground scene, and, you know, there's actually a lot of people wanting to go out and check out the gigs and check out the music. So I think it's slowly improving. I mean, I'm doing a fair bit of teaching as well, and there's a lot of young kids coming through that are just really checking out the music, and they want to come and see the gigs, and, you know, and that's, I think that's really healthy to see. And it's really, I'm always pleased to see that when I meet kids that are, you know, working as hard as I was when I was in school, because I had, there's a lot of people, as I said, I was looking up to, like Vince, and, you know, for in terms of the vocal thing, and a whole bunch of other guys, you know, for the saxophone as well. So it's really healthy to see that that's still going. And the more that you look at places like the Arts Unit, where they're running big bands, and, you know, and also the Jazz Workshop Australia, where there's a bunch of kids going through, and there's some really, really amazing players, it's good to see that whole process happening, and it's feeding through the con. I think, you know, the problem in Sydney, though, is having the space for everyone to play. You know, we've lost a lot of venues, so guys like Cam Undy have sort of taken that initiative with Venue 505 and...
taken a risk.
Yeah, taken a risk, but, I mean, it's doing amazingly, you know. Shortly after the launch, I'm heading off to China for a while, but I'd love to do a gig at 505 when I get back. I had a gig there with Todd Hardy's quintet, who you mentioned before, and I just had such an amazing venue. It's really nice and intimate, and I think in many respects, you know, it's a really great venue. He's done really well with that.
What are you heading off to China to do?
I'm doing a musical, would you believe?
Really?
I am, yeah. I'm going over there to tour around China with a musical. So we're doing sort of a different city every week. I'm not singing in that. I'm just sort of playing in the orchestra. Yeah, it's going to be a good opportunity. I sort of took that after, you know, booking the launch and everything, and I thought, I don't know if this is good timing or not, but, you know, either way, it's going to be great to sort of get away and
see. How many weeks are you away for?
I'm going for 7 weeks, so okay. It's not too long, but it's, you know, it's going to be an interesting trip. We're doing a different city every week and traveling around with a bunch of great musicians, so a lot of guys, some guys from fourth year at the con are playing in the orchestra, and so it's going to be great. You know, we're going to have a good time together, I'm sure. And
where do you want to take this, Nick? What's your short to medium term goal as far as your career is concerned?
Well, I think it's funny, now that it's out, I just want to record again. That's certainly the plan, is to try and spend the next sort of year or so writing. I mean, I have been doing quite a bit of writing, and I'd been doing a bit of writing leading up to the recording of this CD. But at the time, I sort of felt like it was a good idea to sort of put an album of stuff out of me interpreting other people's stuff. And then I thought, if I can get some attention with that. And I suppose the goal with this CD is, I have put and will be putting in a bunch of festival applications, both around Australia and overseas, to try and do some festivals under my own name. Because even most of my festival experience has been, you know, working with other guys' bands. So it'll be good to do something under my own name, I think, and to get myself established a bit around that scene. And I'd particularly love to try and do some of the more, I guess, mainstream festivals in Europe, if I can get some of those. And then back into the studio to do another one and see where that takes me. Excellent. But I ultimately just want to keep playing music. I mean, I just love the career, and I just love doing it, you know, every day of the week. And I think if you're doing something you're passionate about, you know, I think, because as I said, I've spent a long time playing in some corporate events and doing weddings, which you sort of have to do in Sydney if you want to just make the money as a player, I suppose. I think if you're doing what you love, then all of that other stuff will sort itself out, you know. So
it'll fall into line.
You know, and I think a few people have told me that too over the years, have just said, look, if you're not doing what you want to be doing, then if you just make the change, everything eventually will sort itself out and sort of fall into line. So I guess that's what I'm sort of hoping might happen with this, you know, we'll see where it goes, but, you know, that's the plan. And as I said to you before too, there's like a few tracks on the album that we took Stevie Wonder compositions and interpreted.
Well, on your website, nickjeffries.com, you mentioned some of your influences, Donny Hathaway, Michael Jackson, even there's a Michael Jackson track on the album as well, which we'll hear on another night.
And I think that's, you know, an indication too, I mean, of, you know, when you were saying before about how the younger generation sort of perceive jazz, more educated people are just into anything that's sounding good, any music that's good on any level. And I think Stevie's one of those artists that sort of seems to appeal to everyone, you know. And So, he's been such a huge influence on me, and I know he's been a huge influence on lots of jazz musicians. And actually, I'm not sure which Stevie track you're planning to play there, but...
Isn't she lovely?
Oh, great. Well, to give you an idea, that arrangement, your idea for that arrangement came from me watching an Aaron Goldberg trio performance at the Wine Bank when I was first at the con, And he did this tune with this sort of same groove, not the same change as we sort of, Hugh Barrett and I sort of got together and worked on the reharmonization of it. But I heard Aaron Goldberg do it as this sort of Afro-Cuban thing, and I thought, well, that's a perfect example. You know, yes. There's lots of musicians that are so influenced by whatever they're hearing.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for having me, Frank.